From Harrisburg to Indiana, Mount Pleasant to Reading, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf has issued a wide-ranging executive order to curb the Second Amendment rights of Pennsylvanians. Kim Stolfer from Firearms Owners Against Crime is here to discuss the governor's actions. The Antique Automobile Club Museum near Hershey has a world-class collection of motor vehicles. Joe Geiger has Jeff Bleemeister from the museum in this week's Community Benefit Spotlight. And Pennsylvania families should have the option of choosing the school that's right for their children, public, private, charter, or other. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Kim Stolfer in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Members of the House Majority Policy Committee toured businesses in South Central Pennsylvania over the past few weeks and repeatedly heard the same message from employers. We need more workers. State Representative Barb Gleim of Cumberland County told the Center Square that, quote, we need to get more skilled people into the pipeline, end quote, adding the jobs available are not minimum wage jobs, but rather good paying jobs, but employers lack applicants. Although lagging most other states, Pennsylvania's economy is doing well, and the expansion has resulted in the need for more skilled workers. Sessions of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives will continue to open with prayer. This after a federal appeals court this past week reversed a lower court ruling that held the chamber's policy of not allowing atheists to deliver the invocation does not violate the U.S. Constitution. The House limits prayers to guest chaplains who believe in God or a higher power. House Speaker Mike Terzai successfully argued that the policy does not violate the Constitution's Establishment Clause because people of different faiths offer the invocation. A grand jury has recommended that no charges be filed against a former state lawmaker accused of sexual assault. Dauphin County District Attorney Fran Chardo said no charges will be filed against Brian Ellis, who represented a Butler County district prior to being accused of impropriety. Ellis has denied the allegations, but resigned his seat earlier this year. The grand jury also recommended that the legislature establish an independent committee to look into such allegations, which may arise in the future. And the House Liquor Control Committee held a hearing this week on a proposal by Representative Matt Dowling of Fayette County to revise restaurant liquor license rules so that customers can purchase more beer and wine to go. The Dowling bill would lift limits on restaurants having over 30 seats. Labor unions opposed the bill, as they traditionally seek to limit any changes to the state's antiquated liquor laws. Read about all things Pennsylvania on patownhall.com. In the wake of recent mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, gun control advocates have escalated their push against Second Amendment rights. Governor Tom Wolf has joined that effort, issuing an executive order he claims will help to curb gun violence. But will it? Here to discuss the growing challenges to legal gun ownership is Kim Stolfer. Kim is president of Firearms Owners Against Crime. Kim, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kim, before we get into a discussion of the issue, tell us a little bit about Firearms Owners Against Crime. What is your organization? How are you set up? What do you do?
Firearms Owners Against Crime was organized after the city of Pittsburgh tried to ban guns in 93, as well as Philadelphia, because we figured that the average citizen could get involved more and have a much more decided effect on the education and knowledge that legislators have or lack thereof, as well as to put pressure on legislators to make decisions on public policy in a constitutional fashion. So we've been energizing gun owners and Second Amendment advocates, and rights advocates really all across Pennsylvania for the last 26 years, as well as educating legislators and working on responsible legislative options for dealing with violent criminals while not sacrificing freedom.
Interesting, you had mentioned that you were formed as the city of Pittsburgh was trying to take away gun rights. Of course, history is repeating itself. We're right back there. Mayor Peduto and the city council have passed what are in the view of many of us, clearly unconstitutional laws. Can you tell us a bit about what the mayor has proposed and where that stands, the fight to try to protect our rights against those what are clearly unconstitutional laws?
Well, in the 95 decision, we went to court and the city of Pittsburgh signed a consent decree. And it goes to further to the fact that sometimes you can't trust government to follow the law. They were supposed to abide by all Pennsylvania gun laws, which they obviously haven't currently. And this new proposal, which is actually three different sections of law relating to guns and regarding red flag laws, accessories, ammunition, and firearms banning, is a very wide-ranging attack on every facet of not only preemption, but the Constitution. And we have sued them, and we're in the process of trying to get the underlying manipulations and behind-the-scenes processes done so we can get before the court and finally have them be stopped from what they're doing. I want to add that what the city of Pittsburgh is doing is a crime under Pennsylvania law. It's in Title 18, Section 6120. And quite frankly, the district attorney is shirking his duty and not criminally charging them, especially considering their violation of the consent decree from over 20 years ago.
And across the state in Philadelphia, we had a situation where Mayor Kinney, a couple of weeks ago, we had the tragic development of a shootout that occurred. Six police officers were wounded. Thankfully, nobody was killed. But the mayor immediately blamed the gun and not the shooter. Are we seeing pressure for more gun control measures in Philadelphia as well as Pittsburgh?
Well, that's always the case with some Democrat members and also with the anti-gun groups that essentially have a stranglehold on some of the thought processes and the individual thought, some of these legislators. They focus on the gun because they're forcing an agenda. In any type of solution to the problem, what they're after is to actually limit rights based in the blood of the innocent and the victim. We do not support that kind of a concept because we believe that rights should not be sacrificed on the altar of political correctness. And so what they're doing is they're trying to force the legislature to act emotionally instead of realizing what they're proposing is going to make things worse and is going to hurt more good people. They're doing nothing about the courts. They're doing nothing about the failure to have concurrent jurisdiction and have the federal government step in when necessary. We are plea bargaining away charges. We have all the laws we need. Pennsylvania is the 11th most restrictive state in the nation, and we're not applying the laws, as is the case with the Philadelphia cop shooter, where he had 12 pages of a criminal record. And when you look at it, it is shocking. Everyone I've showed it to, including legislators, is just completely overwhelmed with the plea bargaining of gun charges. And now they want more gun control laws after we're the 11th most restrictive in a state where our rights say the right of the citizen to bear arms in defense of themselves in the state shall not be questioned. And we have all these laws that automatically restrict the people's right to bear arms, to transport a firearm, to sell a firearm to a friend, to even loan a firearm. So it is one of the greatest propaganda jobs that has ever been done on human beings.
We are talking with Kim Stolfer, who is president of Firearms Owners Against Crime. And Kim, you mentioned that the state constitution says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be questioned. So the fact that we have, among others, the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, not only questioning but proposing more draconian gun laws, don't you see that as just a violation of the constitution just by virtue of the fact that these additional gun restrictions are even being proposed?
Absolutely. Every legislator in Pennsylvania swears an oath to the Constitution, the same as our military and police, except Governor Wolf and members of the Pennsylvania House and Senate swear not only to support and defend the Constitution, but there's an added word in there, obey. And obey means you're supposed to protect and enshrine these freedoms that are embodied in Article 1. The fact is that what they're doing, what the governor is doing and some members of the House and Senate are doing, is they're excusing the fact that government has failed at every turn to hold criminals accountable. And so they're trying to reach out to a public that would like to see more safety, where this public that they're reaching out to has no idea the severity and the complexity and the intrusiveness, the current laws we have now, and ask them, do we need more controls on firearms? And in that manner, they're excusing the failure of the courts and the justice system from holding criminals accountable. Make sure that repeat recidivist violent criminals with firearms are held accountable. And 5-year mandatory gun charges, one of the most plea bargained away criminal charges across the Commonwealth. And yet we don't talk about that. The media avoids it like the plague because they're afraid of challenging legislators. But here the executive order from Governor Wolf is nothing more than demagoguery and lies. He talks about the growing problem with mass casualty events, mass killings. But it's not a growing problem. Professor Alan Fox, who's the nationwide expert, James Alan Fox, on mass killing events. And he says it's not a growing problem. It's a diminishing problem. And here's another thing. The violent crime with firearms is at historic lows. It's not growing. We don't have an epidemic of violence. We have an actual dropping rate of violence per capita. And yet in Pennsylvania, here's another thing that the governor avoids. The 6 top cities, Philadelphia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Erie, Reading, Allentown, those 6 cities, those are the ones that have over 50% of the violent crime with firearms, and yet they only have 18% of the population. Every one of those cities is controlled by an anti-gun Democrat mayor who only wants to take and push gun control and not solutions. And that's one of the reasons why we exist, is because we will no longer tolerate compromise, and we want to focus on solutions to this problem instead of demagoguery and advancing an agenda of bigger government.
What, Kim, is the ulterior motive here? Obviously, as you've pointed out, the current laws are not being enforced, at least not to the degree that they need to be. So if current laws aren't being enforced, certainly criminals aren't following the current law because criminals don't. What good are additional laws going to do if we aren't enforcing the ones we already have? Now, what is their end game here? Is it just a crass political calculation to get votes? Why are they trying to push these additional laws when the ones we have already aren't being enforced?
I believe it's in a larger perspective, it's an assault on our freedoms. I don't believe that people like Charles Schumer or Tom Wolf or anyone of that ilk, former Governor Ed Rendell, they don't respect the Constitution. They see it as an impediment to a larger government. They don't like controls on government itself. We're supposed to have an accountable, small government. And yet, everything you see coming from Harrisburg now is the growth of government is to somehow be from cradle to grave security. But as we're seeing in San Francisco and other cities, that whole concept is collapsing. And yet, they want to bring that here to Pennsylvania. America is a republic. We're not a democracy. And I think that Tom Wolf and the Philadelphia mayor, the Pittsburgh mayor, they've all forgot the concept of the fact that individual liberties and respecting and protecting them are their highest duty. So they're after driving a wedge between our freedoms in any way they can, because individuality of Americans, everyone listening to this show, that individuality is something that is a challenge to their views.
We have again been talking with Kim Stolfer, who is president of Firearms Owners Against Crime. Kim, if we have folks who would like to contact you or learn more about this issue, where can they find you on the web?
Our website is www.foac-pac.org. Again, that's www.foac-pac.org.
Kim Stolfer of Firearms Owners Against Crime. Kim, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Hershey, Pennsylvania is home to the Antique Automobile Club Museum, which boasts a wide-ranging and unique collection of motor vehicles. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Jeff Bleemeister, executive director of the museum, in this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Jeff, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here today.
Jeff, you have a unique organization for Pennsylvania, and someone might wonder how this all got started here, but you're the executive director of the Antique Automobile Club Museum. Jeff, what was the inspiration for starting? Why did we need to have an Antique Automobile Club Museum?
That's an interesting question. Well, Hershey area is kind of a hotbed of car activity. We have the big fall meet there sponsored by the club every year in October. And back in the 90s, the club decided that they had enough interest and thought it would be a good idea to put together an educational 501c3 museum. So they started a separate committee. It actually went through the process of incorporating, started raising money, and developed and built a museum that opened in 2003 as an independent educational 501c3 that's totally separate from the club but shares a lot of the same goals and philosophy.
So, club, you're talking about the Antique Automobile Club of America,
right,
which is easy to confuse because not only are your names similar, but your addresses are very close.
Exactly. Well, we share land with the Hershey region, which is part of the club. They're the group of that hosts the show every year. In fact, we bought this huge parcel of land. We sold part of it to the Spring Hill Suites next door, so we'd have a hotel as neighbor, and then we sold part of the property to the Hershey region of the AACA, so we know our neighbor in that respect as well, since they put on the fall meet. And we still have enough land here to build and do other things, so we're very fortunate.
Well, I've been a guest at the museum, and it's a phenomenal facility, and the exhibits are terrific. It's a world-class automotive experience for people of all ages. I just thought it was terrific. You must be very proud, too, that you're a Smithsonian affiliate. How do we get that in Pennsylvania?
Yes, we're affiliated with the Smithsonian Institution. We actually, I applied for that when I was curator. I had the good fortune to be the museum's first curator. I'm a museum professional who's always loved cars, so when this job came up in late 2002 and I applied for it, I became the first curator. I got to help open the museum, and I applied for a Smithsonian affiliation because I knew what a good program it was, and we were a good fit because the Smithsonian just knows a little bit about everything. I mean, they're the national treasure, but we're experts on automotive history, and together we can help each other grow. So that was a good partnership that worked out well.
Well, I want to get to a special exhibit that you have there, but first, let's talk globally about the kinds of cars and buses and motorcycles and all the things that you have in the museum.
Sure. I mean, we go by the tagline, Antique or Automotive Museum at Hershey, and we really display just about anything that has wheels on it. Currently, we have our main building is 70,000 square feet, three floors. We have a partnership with another separate 501c3 called the Museum of Bus Transportation, and they typically have anywhere from 8 to 10 buses in our lower-level exhibit gallery. And then we have 35 to 40 motorcycles, sometimes as many as 50, and up to 75 cars in the building at any given time, set in period backdrops, as well as changing exhibit areas and theme things. So we really rotate exhibits constantly. We have a wealth of vehicles here. And something we just started doing last summer that we've developed this summer, we have a storage building behind our facility that's closed to the public generally that holds 75 to 80 more cars. We've opened that up by special tour for people to come see it, a whole other museum while they're here visiting us.
So you would rival someone like Jay Leno's garage, something like that.
I think so. We probably have a few more cars, but we definitely have better hours.
I'm sure.
No appointments necessary.
That's good. Well, I have been a guest a number of times to the museum, but I haven't been there recently. So what might have changed over the last 3 years, given that that's your tenure also as executive director of the organization?
Oh, yeah. I was fortunate. I spent 9 years here as curator. I went away for a little while to work for the Museum Commission of Pennsylvania, running a couple museums, and they brought me back to be director, which was a great thing for me because I love this place and I have lots of plans, and our board has lots of plans to see it grow. I don't know if you were here when we had the Tucker exhibit installed, but we have the world's largest collection of Tucker automobiles and automobile-related artifacts. We have all the blueprints from the factory, and we have three Tuckers and a test chassis here, as well as a car that was manufactured out of fiberglass for the movie. So that's probably the biggest thing that may have changed over the last few years. Other than that, we know we change exhibits here every 6 months, so things are constant flux.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Jeff Bleemeister, the executive director of the Antique Automobile Club Museum. Jeff, I'm aware of what a Tucker is because there were probably one or two on exhibit when I came through, and I'm old enough that I actually may have seen one growing up. What's special about the Tucker, and why is it a special exhibit?
Well, if people had a chance to see the Francis Ford Coppola movie that came out, I guess it's almost 30 years ago now, the anniversary of that movie, it tells about Tucker, the man in his dream. It was probably one of the few successful or semi-successful startup companies after World War II. Tucker had had some family money. He made more money during World War II in the armament industry, and he wanted to build the perfect car. So he had this goal to make a car that was performance-based, safe, economical. I mean, you name it, he wanted to have it. He wanted all the latest technology involved in his car. And he soon found out that he couldn't do all that. As an example, his marketing people told him, if you put seatbelts in your car, people won't buy it because they'll automatically think that it's unsafe. So which is comical nowadays, but back then that was reality. Tucker in 48 built approximately 50 cars. All of them are still accounted for. A couple are no longer with us, but every one has been accounted for. They're very rare cars. If you follow the auctions, they're now selling a surplus of $1 million every time one is offered. And we have the only automatic transmission car here. We have two others, and we have, like I said, all the original stuff from the factory, the blueprints, et cetera. It's a fascinating success story. I mean, ultimately, he was put out of business, only manufactured about 50 cars, but it's a brief snapshot of American history, and it's just a fascinating automobile.
I know he was innovative because I remember there was a headlight right in the front dash of the car, and it turned with the steering wheel. Now, we have some cars like that today, but he was way ahead of his time.
That's
for that.
Probably the one telltale sign of a Tucker, aside from his torpedo-like body. We actually have a simulator here. We had one custom made. You can take selfie pictures in it. You can get behind the wheel. There's a Tucker radio playing music from the 40s, and you can turn the wheel with a Cyclops headlight and take your pictures as you're driving along a city landscape.
That alone would be worth a visit. You do other things there besides preserve cars and exhibit cars. You do special events and that kind of thing. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, our museum is open for rental for all kinds of facilities, but we also kind of events, but we also put on a lot of things of our own. We have a great craft beer festival here that's in its 10th anniversary, believe it or not. We've been very successful with that. We have a great program called Night at the Museum that takes place during the fall meet. It's October 9th this year. We honor someone in every year, give them our Automotive Heritage Award. It's a fundraising dinner. Plus, we have lectures, programs, you name it. We have a little bit of everything here. We always try and keep things fresh. We want people to come back and keep engaging with the museum.
At the end of a long day, you worked your tail off. Your staff worked their tails off. How do you measure how you're making a difference?
I measure it by the impact of the comments that people provide. We'd like to talk to our people out on the floor. We get repeat visitors all the time. We have people who love this place, and they reinforce the feeling that we're doing a good job, and that makes us happy. So we're always, you know, we're in the people business. We're about providing education, as well, you know, mixed with entertainment, which is really good in an automobile museum. We try and bridge that gap and do both, and I think we're pretty successful at it. At least that's what people are telling us.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Jeff Leemeister, the executive director of the Antique Automobile Club Museum in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Jeff, if people want to learn more about the museum, how can they find you?
You can give us a call at 717-566-7100, and we'll be happy to answer any questions, or just go to our website, which is at www.aacamuseum.org.
That's great. You have a terrific place there. If anybody's going to be in the Hershey area, I recommend that you stop in and check you out. And thanks for being a guest on the program, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
It is time for every child in Penns Woods to have the opportunity to go to the public, private, or charter school of their choice. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Recently, Governor Wolf has proposed making changes to the state's charter school law through new regulations. With increased discussion happening in Harrisburg around education policy, I'd like to share Americans for Prosperity's vision for educational opportunity. First, let's talk numbers. There are 500 public school districts in Pennsylvania with 1,766,486 students enrolled. According to the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, there are 132,979 students enrolled in charter schools, and according to the PA Department of Education, homeschool enrollment totals 24,568 students, and private school enrollment totals just over 245,000 students. So, in Pennsylvania, there are over 2 million students and their families that education policy directly affects. Every parent knows their child is one of a kind, which is why Pennsylvania should be a place where the K-12 education system truly helps all students discover, develop, and apply their unique abilities, establishing a foundation for a life of contribution and fulfillment. Every child should have access to a quality education that meets their individual talents and needs and helps them move forward on the path to reaching their potential. What is educational freedom? Well, educational freedom means Pennsylvania families can choose to educate their child in a traditional public school, public charter school, private school, homeschool, or ways yet to be imagined, regardless of income or zip code. It also means teachers have the freedom to provide innovative ways to educate students to best meet the needs of children and their families. Why do we need educational freedom? Well, one out of every five students are attending a public school that their family chose by moving to a neighborhood specifically so their kids could attend that school. One out of every 10 students are attending a private school their families chose as the best option for them. And 3% of children are homeschooled by their families. Combined with the 14% of students attending a public school they were not assigned to, nearly half of all students and their families have exercised some type of choice when it comes to their child's education. Unfortunately, this freedom is often afforded only to families who can pay for it through private tuition or purchasing a home in the right zip code. For most low and middle income families, it is simply not an option to pick up and move to a better school district, pay for private school tuition, or keep a parent at home to homeschool their children. That's where educational freedom comes in. It extends choices that many families already have, to all families. What reforms are needed to bring educational freedom to our families? While states can put educational freedom within reach for all families in a variety of ways, policies that allow education funding to effectively follow the child are the best way to ensure that all the resources set aside to educate our kids are being driven towards meeting each child's individual needs. In recent years, education savings accounts have emerged as the most innovative and flexible way to expand educational freedom across the country. Who should be able to access educational freedom? Every child deserves access, and every family deserves the ability to exercise educational freedom. So it's time to come together and embrace education policies that allow every child to unleash their extraordinary and unique potential. Families, teachers, lawmakers, all Pennsylvanians should seize this opportunity to work together to provide an education that empowers teachers and helps every child find fulfillment and success. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director. You can find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania, on Facebook by searching for at PAAFP, and on our website, AmericansForProsperity.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHYL-FM, WIOO-FM, and Red 102.3 FM in Carlisle, along with WPMG-FM in Danville, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.